Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. I am your skeptical host, Chris Bond. And the title of today's podcast is Dancing on the Ceiling with Ketorolac for Pain. Our guest skeptic today is Dr. Ken Milne. Ken's a frontline community emergency medicine physician, passionate about skepticism, evidence-based medicine, and knowledge translation. He is also the moderator for Emergency Medicine Abstracts, faculty member of BEAM, and creator of the Skeptic's Guide. We're switching up the S-Gem this episode, and Ken has graciously allowed me to sit in the driver's seat for this one. Thanks, Ken.
Yeah, I just want to say, how weird is it listening to someone else do the intro, and you start realizing, wow, is that what it sounds like? Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. But hey, Chris, you're doing a great job. I'm glad to give up the driver's seat and sit in the passenger side. I will try very hard not to be a backseat driver on this one.
I know, it's a weird feeling, man. Today, we're talking about a subject near and dear to my heart. It's a topic I've been interested in for years, and the subject of maybe one or two blog posts slash rants in the past. That's right, it's time to talk about Ketorolac. But wait, there's more. Not only will you be hearing the sweet sound of Ken Milne, but you also get another great guest from the foam world, a real NSAID guru and author of a recent practice-changing paper.
Ooh, don't tell who it is yet. Let's drag this one out a bit, okay, Chris? Why don't we just give the case?
Let's do it.
Okay, so a 37-year-old man presents to the emergency department with sudden onset of right-sided flank pain, hematuria, and vomiting. He rates his pain as 8 out of 10, and he's writhing around on the stretcher. He says it feels like its previous kidney stone, and his vital signs are within normal limits.
All right, Ken, you grab the ultrasound probe and do a quick bedside ultrasound. It shows he's got a normal aorta and no AAA. It looks like some mild right-sided hydro. You diagnose him with renal colic, and he is requesting analgesia. He says morphine has made me so sick in the past, but a shot of 30 milligrams of Ketorolac has really helped. You decide to start by giving Ketorolac and an antiemetic. What dose of Ketorolac do you give?
Well, Ketorolac is commonly used as a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug in the emergency department for treatment of moderate to severe acute pain.
Unlike opioid analgesics, NSAID dosing is limited by its analgesic ceiling, meaning there is a dose analgesic response. Above certain doses, NSAIDs produce more side effects or harms without providing any additional analgesia. Previous literature suggests that the Ketorolac analgesic ceiling dose is 10 milligrams, which is much lower than the doses of 30 milligrams or even 60 milligrams recommended by textbooks.
This is especially important as Ketorolac has a greater gastrointestinal hemorrhage risk than other NSAIDs, and this appears to increase at higher dosages. Furthermore, intramuscular dose of 15, 30, and 60 milligrams appear to increase postoperative bleeding.
Let's get right into the clinical question.
Okay. Does 10 milligrams of Ketorolac intravenously provide similar analgesic efficacy for treatment of acute pain compared to dosages of 15 or 30 milligrams?
What's the reference for this question?
Well, this is Motov et al. Comparison of intravenous Ketorolac at 3 single-dose regimens for treating acute pain in the emergency department, a randomized control trial. And this was published in Annals of Emergency Medicine in December 2016.
December 2016? That's like, what, 3 months ago? This is cutting-edge stuff.
Well, it's cutting that knowledge translation to less than 1 year.
Yeah, we're at 3 months. We're rocking it. All right, let's get into the PICO, Ken. What's the population in this study?
So they enrolled adults, which they defined as 18 to 64 years of age, presenting to the emergency department with acute flank pain, abdominal pain, back pain, musculoskeletal pain, headache, or dental pain, with an intensity of at least or greater than 5 on a numeric rating scale that went from 0 as the lowest to 10 being the highest.
The NRS didn't go to 11? Like Spinal Tap?
No, this one did not go to 11, Chris.
I always hear patients tell me they have 20 out of 10 pain. So I don't know where they get these NRSs from. So there are a few exclusion criteria in this study. First, age greater than or equal to 65, pregnancy or breastfeeding, active peptic ulcer disease, acute gastrointestinal hemorrhage, known history of renal or hepatic insufficiency, allergy to NSAIDs, unstable vital signs, which they classified as systolic blood pressure less than 90 or greater than 180, or a heart rate less than 50 or greater than 150. What was the intervention in this study?
So, Chris, they were looking at three different dosages of ketorolac. They were looking at 10 milligrams, 15 milligrams, or 30 milligrams, and they were all given IV.
And the control?
There wasn't a control group. This was comparing different dosages.
Okay, let's talk about the outcome. What was the primary outcome?
Well, they wanted to see a reduction, or they were interested in what the reduction would be in a numeric rating scale at 30 minutes.
The secondary outcomes were adverse events and rescue analgesia. At this point, it's my pleasure to introduce the lead author of this paper, a man who I've known for 5 years through the foam world and I'm meeting today for the first time. Super excited to welcome him to the show, Dr. Sergey Motov. Sergey is an emergency medicine physician in the Department of Emergency Medicine at Maimonides Medical Center in Brooklyn, New York. Welcome to the SGEM, Sergey.
Thank you very much, Chris and Ken, for having me today on the show. I am truly honored to be here today.
Now, Sergey, listening to you just give that first sentence, I thought you were from New York. You don't sound like you're from New York.
I am from New York, but, you know, Russian accent, working in Brooklyn, that's probably what you're hearing.
Ah, so is there a big Russian population or community in Brooklyn, New York?
Largest in the world after Mother Russia.
Oh, little factoid. Okay, well, what got you so interested in looking at ketorolac dosing?
Ketorolac analgesia has been genuine and greater passion of mine ever since I was introduced to a concept of analgesic ceiling of NSAIDs as a class of medications, including ketorolac, by Joe Lex. He has pointed me out to a brilliant but unjustifiably unnoticed by YEM community work done by doctors Catapano, Rainey, Aurora, and you, Chris, that scientifically push for proper analgesic dosing regimens of ibuprofen and ketorolac. Indeed, by honoring that very concept, I got really hooked. And since 2006, I've been looking for the opportunity to validate this concept in the ED by comparing commonly used super analgesic dosages of intravenous ketorolac, 15 milligram and 30 milligram, to its analgesic ceiling dose of 10. Finally, 10 years later, we've conducted a trial and we published a paper.
Well, it is fantastic to have you on the SGEM today, Sergey. Can you tell the SGEMers your conclusions?
Absolutely. Ketorolac has similar analgesic efficacy at intravenous doses of 10, 15, and 30 milligram, showing that intravenous ketorolac administered at the analgesic ceiling dose of 10 milligram provided effective pain relief to ED patients with moderate to severe pain without increased adverse effects.
That sounds pretty fantastic. Now it's time to go through the quality checklist for this randomized controlled trial. The first question, Ken, is the study population included or focused on those in the emergency department?
Yes.
The patients were adequately randomized?
Yes, they were.
Was the randomization process concealed?
Yes.
Were patients analyzed in the groups to which they were randomized?
Yes, they were.
Next, were the study patients recruited consecutively? That is, no selection bias.
Well, we have our first no response. Screening and enrollment were Monday to Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m.
All right, I think we'll have to get back to that one in a little bit. Were the patients in both groups similar with respect to prognostic factors?
Well, we put down unsure for this one. There were many more patients with headaches in the 30 milligram group.
Were all participants, meaning patients, clinicians, and outcome assessors, unaware of group allocation?
Well, for this answer, we're going to put yes and no. The providers, the participants, and the data collectors were blinded, but the pharmacist and research manager and statistician were aware of group allocation.
All right. Were all groups treated equally except for the intervention?
Yes, they were.
Was follow-up complete, that is 80% for both groups?
Yes.
And were all patient important outcomes considered?
Yes.
The final question, was the treatment effect large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
And we're going to put yes for this one as well.
All right, that's quite a lot of yeses, but we'll come back to a couple of the other ones later. So getting into the key results, there were 240 patients enrolled in the study, with 80 in each group. Mean age was around 40 years, with about two-thirds of patients being male. The mean pain score was in the mid-7s out of 10. What was the primary outcome, Ken?
All right, here we go. The primary outcome for this study was no significant difference in the reduction of pain score from baseline across the three groups.
Wow, looking at the primary outcome in all three groups, that's 10, 15, and 30 milligrams of intravenous ketorolac, the numeric rating scale pain scores were reduced by 2.4 to 3 out of 10. Now let's talk about the secondary outcomes.
Well, there were no concerning adverse events, with the most common adverse effect being dizziness, nausea, and headache, with no difference across the three doses.
And there was no difference between the groups in terms of need for rescue morphine at any time.
They did do some exploratory outcomes showing no statistical significant difference in pain score reduction across the three groups from 15 all the way out to 120 minutes after ketorolac administration.
All right, Ken, this feels kind of weird coming from me, but I want you to talk nerdy to me. Now, it's super great to have Sergey available to talk nerdy about this study, and we appreciate how hard it is to do research and get it published. So congratulations, Sergey.
Thank you very much. It means a lot to me, and it means a lot to our research team.
Well, we're going to go through five potential limitations of the study, and I'm going to start it off with the first one being selection bias. You did not enroll patients consecutively, but rather from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday to Friday, when an emergency department pharmacist was available for blinded medication preparation. Sergey, do you think this could have introduced some selection bias?
Unfortunately, yes. We have designed this trial with a great hope to make it as applicable to general population that we see in our emergency department as possible, despite the utilization of a convenient sampling. However, despite the broad inclusion criteria of patients that resemble the most commonly used indications to IV ketorolac administration in EDs, I would say across the country, despite the proper randomization and adherence to group allocation throughout the entire study, despite within and between group comparisons, and lastly, a relatively wide range of age groups, 18 to 64, under representation bias, unfortunately, did took place. And what I mean by under representation bias, it did so due to uneven distribution of certain pain syndromes between three groups. As an example, more patients with a headache, but less patients with a renal colic or flank pain were allocated to 30 milligram group in comparison to 10 milligram and 15 milligram. I believe that that could have been avoided had we enrolled patients consecutively throughout the daytime and nighttime. And this consecutive enrollment would have evened all three groups out.
Fantastic. So let's talk about blinding in the next question. Providers, participants, and data collectors were blinded, but pharmacists, research managers, and statisticians were aware of group allocation. Do you think that could have introduced some bias?
Highly unlikely, as neither pharmacist, research manager, or statistician had any direct contact or any direct interactions with study patients. In addition, none of them participated in data collection.
All right, question three is about the primary outcome, Sergey. Why did you choose 30 minutes as the pain score for the primary endpoint? And why did you stop recording pain scales at 2 hours? Some may argue that the longer duration of ketorolac is one of its benefits.
All right, so we have 2/3 parts questions. Part number one. Majority of the studies that evaluated and compared analgesic efficacy of intravenous ketorolac to other NSAIDs or to opioids demonstrated the onset of analgesia of intravenous ketorolac as early as 20 to 30 minutes post-administration, with a maximum analgesic efficacy at 1 to 2 hours. That is why we used a change in pain score via numeric and radius scale at 30 minutes mark as the main outcome to detect the immediate or the earliest difference in pain score, if one exists, between three groups. A 2 hour time frame as the terminal point to data collection was based on the premise that this was a point of maximum analgesic efficacy once again of intravenous ketorolac, at which patients either have acceptable pain relief and ready to be discharged or have unacceptably high level of pain that requires rescue analgesia, further investigation, and maybe even admission to the hospital. However, from practical experience, majority of patients with pain syndromes specified in our study are frequently discharged from ED within an hour, hour and a half after receiving intravenous ketorolac. If I may point to a point that you brought up regarding longer duration of action of ketorolac as of benefit, yes. There was a concern, or there is a concern among our colleagues who read the study, that higher dose of Ketorolac could have resulted in more prolonged analgesia. Thus, patients should have been followed for longer than 2 hours. While it may be true for super analgesic doses of Ketorolac, I'd say probably greater than 60, multiple studies conducted on patients with postoperative and cancer pain clearly demonstrated similar change in pain scores up to 6 hours, and those pain scores were measured on hourly basis between 10 milligram, 30 milligram, frankly, even 90 milligram for IM administration of Ketorolac and 10 and 30 milligram of intravenous Ketorolac administration.
Chris, did you notice something there? This guy is smart. Because he noticed that, you know, I try to squeeze these things down to 5 questions, but I put in some compound questions, multiple sub-questions in there, just to make it fit my favorite number. So, yeah, we're picking up on something here.
Yeah, I think that Sergey has it all figured out when it comes to the Ketorolac.
No, there's a way more to do, but you guys did an amazing script, and it was a pleasure to punch right answers to it.
All right, Sergey, let's talk about question 4, the intention to treat. So data was based on the intention to treat principle, but technically it was not a pure intention to treat analysis. Can you explain what you did to account for missing data and fulfill this requirement?
I would love to do this. And I want you to forgive me if I might get a bit too nerdy. While at the first glance, it might seem that we've deviated from original intention to treat analysis and used so-called pair protocol analysis, we actually used a multiple imputation technique to account for all missing data, such as pain scores. This statistical technique allowed us to include the original number of patients, 80 per group, for final data analysis. And here is the not so much of a technical part. The idea behind imputation is that if we could fill in or impute the missing data, then we could just analyze these imputed data sets and subsequently compare them to non-imputed data and see if there's any difference. We've utilized 5 imputed data sets at each time point of the study that included before and after pain scores and factors related to missing data. That missing data were replaced with the values from the statistical model based on distributions in observed data set. Subsequently, these sets were analyzed further to arrive to a single weighted test statistics and p-value. And lastly, we carried out additional sensitivity analysis of the imputed data sets to determine that data was indeed missing at random.
Sergey, I'm not sure if you noticed, but the title of this section of the podcast is actually Talk Nerdy to Me. So I think you're talking real nerdy, and I love it.
I don't think you can get too nerdy, not with us.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Well, the fifth thing and the final thing is the single center. This was done in a large urban community teaching hospital with you, Sergey, as the pain treatment champion. And even your Twitter handle is pain-free ED. Do you think these results would apply to other practice environments without your leadership?
You guys give me too much credit. But I'm a firm believer that we as ED doctors all are champions and all are leaders when it comes to pain management. We are the greatest when it comes to managing a variety of acute and chronic painful conditions, regardless of our practice settings. And as far as Ketorolac goes, I do firmly believe the time has come to really for all of us to start honoring the analgesic ceiling dose of Ketorolac so that patients can receive effective and safe pain relief. I truly hope that the results of our trial will be validated by our colleagues in their daily practices.
Sergey, that's fantastic. Those are the 5 nerdy questions. Is there anything else about this study you would like to comment upon that you think that the SGEM audience should know?
Just one little thing. NSAIDs as a class, in addition to analgesic and antipyretic properties, possess anti-inflammatory effect. The full anti-inflammatory dose of NSAIDs is significantly higher than the analgesic one and is indeed associated with the severe and at times detrimental side effects. While we did not specifically address the anti-inflammatory effect of different dosing regimens of IV Ketorolac in our study, I think it is important to emphasize that the inflammatory component seen in those acute painful conditions that were represented in our trial are effectively blocked by the simple or plain analgesic dose of Ketorolac. Thus, there is no benefit to exceed the analgesic saline dose of Ketorolac for treating acute painful condition in the ED.
I'm going to throw a plug in here for Calgary. and that Sergey's work has already resulted in a change in ketorolac dosing in the Calgary emergency departments within 3 months of publication of this paper. And a shout out to Sean Dowling, who is another pain and knowledge translation emergency medicine doctor in Calgary.
Well, you just made my day.
So let's talk about now the comment on the author's conclusion compared to the SGEM conclusion, Ken.
It really is hard to disagree with Sergey here, so we're going to agree with the author's conclusion.
And what's our SGEM bottom line?
The bottom line is use 10 milligrams IV ketorolac when treating moderate to severe pain in the emergency department.
Can you give us a case resolution?
Yeah, you give this man 10 milligrams IV of ketorolac for his pain, and it improves from an 8 out of 10 down to a 5 out of 10, and he'd like to go home now. He's given a prescription for analgesia to take at home and discharge instructions.
And what's our clinical application?
Well, based on this high-quality randomized control trial and other information, I'm going to begin using 10 milligrams IV ketorolac for the management of moderate to severe pain in the emergency department.
So one thing that might come up for those of you who are thinking about using ketorolac at 10 milligram dosages is the vial size. So ketorolac tends to come in a 30 milligram per 1 milliliter vial at a lot of sites. And that results in needing 0.35 milliliters of it when the nurse draws it up to get a 10 milligram dose. One thing to think about is the actual convenience of this. And maybe if you get 10 milligram per mil vials at your site, you can change this problem immediately just through convenience. So Ken, what do we tell our patients?
So here's what I'm going to say at the bedside. I can see you're in a lot of pain. We're going to give you a powerful drug called ketorolac through the intravenous line. Now, traditionally, doctors have used 30 milligrams of this drug, but a recent high-quality study showed that there's a ceiling effect to the dose, and in fact, only 10 milligrams is needed and works just as well.
It's time for the Keener contest, Ken. Last week's winner was Melissa Pearson, an RN living in Houston, Texas, pursuing her DNP. But she's originally from Vancouver, BC, eh? She knew James Lind was the Scottish physician who conducted the scurvy trial. What's the Keener contest question this week?
Well, Chris, this week we're looking for the name of the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug that can be obtained from the bark and leaves of the willow tree. And it's been used for over 2,000 years.
If you know the answer to the Keener question, then send an email to the sgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. There's a lot of other FOMED resources on this topic, and we will put links to them in the show notes. Ken, it's been an honor. Thanks so much for letting me sit in the driver's seat for this episode.
You know, I've enjoyed sitting in the passenger seat and maybe even in the back seat. I had to hold back a few times. But yeah, you did a great job, Chris. Really enjoyed it. And thanks for reaching out to Sergey and getting him on the SGEM.
Sergey, thanks to you next for publishing research in a very important part of emergency medicine, pain management.
Thank you so much, guys, both for having me. I had an amazing time and it means a lot to me.
Sergey, as our special guest, you get the honor of giving the SGEM tagline.
Would it be okay, guys, if me as a Russian living in Brooklyn with a Brooklyn Russian accent do the SGEM tagline with a Brooklyn Russian accent?
Да.
Пожалуйста, относитесь скептически ко всему, что вы читаете, то, что вы учите, и то, что вы слышите, и особенно на путеводителя скептика по неотложной помощи.
Talk to everyone next time.